Summer camp is a magic place where kids discover who they are because they have the freedom to explore on their own. Y Camp at Horse Thief Reservoir is a sleepaway camp in the heart of Idaho's wilderness. Each summer, campers make friends, build new skills, and learn to love the outdoors through activities like canoeing, archery, zip lining, rock climbing, campfires, and more. Registration for Y Camp at Horse Thief Reservoir is open. Financial assistance is available. Learn more at ycampidaho.org.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Colombia.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Colombia Calling. I'm Emily Hart, and this week I'm talking to the team at Power Leaves, who are unleashing the nutritional properties of the coca leaf by creating decocainized extracts and essences and exporting them from Colombia across the globe, working with the country's NASA indigenous community. Today on the show, we have Ahmed Shihada, co-founder and president of Power Leaves, and Carolina Mejia, VP of Regulatory Affairs for the company. We're going to be talking all things coca, its properties and uses, how the company is navigating regulation to get coca extracts into markets across the world, and how Power Leaves are challenging the monopoly of the giant household name who import coca leaves to the USA and sell their drinks in more than 200 countries. I'm talking, of course, about Coca-Cola. All that to come, but first, this week's headlines from Colombia, reported by journalist Grace Brennan.
The Colombia Calling podcast is sponsored by Latin News, a leading source of political and economic analysis on Latin America and the Caribbean since 1967. Their flagship publication, the Latin American Weekly Report, provides a behind-the-scenes briefing on all the week's key developments throughout the region. Sign up for a 14-day free trial at latinnews.com. We are also sponsored by BNB Colombia Tours, which is a leading tour operator providing a wonderful range of exclusive small group shared tours for those over 50, along with customizable private tours to both popular and off-the-map destinations throughout this beautiful and diverse country. If you're interested in experiencing one of their unforgettable journeys through Colombia, be it a shared tour with like-minded travelers or creating a unique private package of your own, just complete the form on the Colombia Calling website, that's www.colombiacalling.co, or the BNB Colombia Tours website, that's www.bnbcolombia.com, and they'll be in touch within 24 hours to answer all of your questions and to start the planning of your exclusive Colombian adventure. So that's bnbcolombia.com and latinnews.com. Thank you for supporting our sponsors.
I'm Grace Brennan, and these are your top stories for the week of July 31st, 2023. President Petro's son has been arrested on corruption charges, accusing that he was paid by drug traffickers to fund his father's peace efforts and election campaign. The son, Nicolas Petro, has been detained alongside his ex-wife. Nicolas has denied the claims. Meanwhile, President Petro has said that he will not interfere with the inquiry. The head of the ELN, Antonio Garcia, has ordered all of the armed group structures to abide with a bilateral ceasefire beginning August 3rd and due to last 180 days. Speaking via video, Garcia gave instructions for all group commanders and combatants to suspend attacks. Throughout the ceasefire, peace negotiations will continue in Bogotá between the Colombian government and the ELN. President Petro has appointed a former senior commander of the AUC as peace manager for negotiations with armed groups. Salvatore Mancuso has accepted responsibility for the deaths of more than 300 people and is accused of committing around 75,000 crimes. His inclusion in the peace process is part of Petro's strategy to bring figures from across the political spectrum into the country's future. Victims of Mancuso say that his human rights violations should exclude him. Colombia's government has presented to Congress a 502 trillion peso budget for 2024. the budget includes 94 trillion pesos for serving debt, 97 trillion for investment, 70 trillion for education, health, drinking water, and 57 trillion for the state pension system. Congress has until October 20th to approve the budget. If the proposal is accepted, the budget will be the country's highest ever. The Directorate of the Special Administrative Unit for Migration Colombia has said that foreigners who do not stamp their passport when entering Colombian territory could face fines of up to 7 legal monthly minimum wages, more than 8 million pesos and around 2,000 USD. The move comes after a significant increase in Colombia's migratory flow in recent years. In the Women's World Cup, Colombia beat two-time champion Germany 2-1 in a match on Sunday. Scoring in the 97th minute, the win is Colombia's biggest to date. The team will now play Morocco on Thursday as the last match of their group stage. According to a study by S Money, Bogota's El Dorado Airport is the most congested in the world, with an average of 14.53 daily passengers per 10 square meters. El Dorado concentrates 48% of all of Colombia's air transport, and long lines at counters and security controls and the lack of space to sit or eat have contributed to El Dorado's new title. Those were your top stories for this week. Thank you for listening.
So hello, Ahmed and Carolina. Thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Thanks for having us, Emily.
Thank you. Hello.
So we are going to get a little bit chronological in a second. But before we do that, can you tell us what is Power Leaves and what are you guys up to in Colombia?
Absolutely. At Power Leaves, we've developed the world's first legal Colombian-based supply chain for decoconized coca extract. And this is also the first supply chain for decoconized coca extract outside of the control of Coca-Cola. So we've done this through a novel partnership with an indigenous community in Colombia that allows us to legally cultivate coca leaves and complete an extraction and decoconization process in Colombia. And, the indigenous in Colombia have been harnessing the powers of this magical plant for many different uses for centuries. And, at Power Leaves, we're very excited to bring that plant and its many benefits to the world.
So what are the uses of coca leaf aside from the one that I think we're probably all aware of?
Yeah, so we have three principal business lines. Our first business line is coca extract. And this is the one that most of the world would know through the beloved, unique kind of flavor that's in Coca-Cola beverages. And for us, we're not getting into the cola business. We're looking at different ways to harness the power of the coca plant through our extract products. And that would principally be in food and beverages, and both as a flavoring agent, as an aroma taste, and as well as, it's highly rich in nutrients, and has many other potential wellness benefits for wellness products that we're developing, which are things like energy enhancement, appetite suppression, it's a sweetener, bitterness reducer as well. So there's many, many elements and attributes for that extract product. And then we have an essence product. It's actually a byproduct from the extraction process. And it is used for alcoholic beverages, and that adds a specific unique taste to have things like coca vodka, coca tequila, and other spirits. And where you might go to a local store and find many different types of peach vodkas or something like that. We'd be bringing the first coca vodka style drink to the world. And then the third business line is fertilizer. So our waste stream actually is used of the destroyed alkaloids, kind of is recycled back into a coca fertilizer. And the coca fertilizer has been shown to enhance crop yields. So it's something I'm sure we'll get into this later that the Colombian government is very excited about as it meets many of their objectives with one product.
Amazing. I mean, the plant has, as you point out, been in traditional and medicinal uses for more years than one would like to gesture at, particularly put a number on. And I've spoken to people who say, yeah, my grandparents would make us a coca tea if we had flu or a stomach ache. I mean, there's so much untapped potential that because of the stigma on this plant, which obviously arrived because of its use in the creation of cocaine, haven't really been explored. So back to the start, where did you have this idea and what made you, Ahmed, want to dive into this industry?
Yeah, that's a great question. So my background prior to this, I mean, I'm a lawyer by trade, but my background prior to this, I co-founded a company called MediPharm Labs, which was a medical cannabis extraction company. And, you know, we were licensed in Canada under the medical system before legalization of cannabis here. So very medical-based company that actually makes pharmaceuticals as well, like cannabis-based pharmaceuticals or cannabinoid-based pharmaceutical drugs. So I've always been fascinated with wellness benefits and kind of, you know, the magical components of plants and what could be done. And we were introduced and approached by via mutual contact to this, you know, our key Colombian partners. And, you know, in speaking with them and obviously realizing that there was a potential for a great partnership, the more and more we discussed and discovered the coca leaf. And you know, we like to say small leaf, mighty power. There's so many applications of it and so many, you know, beautiful things that can come from this plant. And in speaking with our indigenous partners and hearing about, you know, anecdotally about the numerous benefits that they've seen for centuries from the plant was fascinating and something, you know, we wanted to take and apply. You know, Pat, the CEO, and myself wanted to take and apply the learnings from the cannabis extraction side to the coca extraction side. And now, you know, cannabis, you see hundreds of companies doing it and doing this in the coca sphere is really novel, like a very fascinating new. And it's just been exciting to kind of uncover the many potential benefits and ways that this plant can be used in a legal beneficial manner.
Right. And I think what's fascinating here is that the uses have been well established in numerous communities in Colombia and other countries in the region for a long time. But in terms of navigating the regulatory frameworks here, the obstacles have been huge, and you guys are pioneering in that sense. The cultivation of coca is very limited in Colombia for obvious reasons, and the importation of coca leaf that hasn't been decoconized, that still has the chemicals, therefore, that one could make cocaine with, is obviously highly limited as well. Carolina, could you explain a bit about how you guys have navigated these frameworks in order to successfully export coca extract?
Yeah, we start like 5 years ago working about developing the idea to work with these magical plants, not just coca leaf. We focus on coca leaf because it's the most beneficial plant for the indigenous community and for all the potential that has this plant. So we start to work with the indigenous community, NASA indigenous community that is in Cauca, is the biggest indigenous community in Colombia. In Colombia, we don't have like a regulatory framework, but we have many regulations that provide us the full coverage of legality for our project. One of those is the United Nations Convention of 1961 that allows the indigenous people to work with the coca leaf in Colombia. Is the only people that can use under the legality the coca leaf. So we start to explore to work with them about because of this reason. So in Colombia, the cultivation is just allowed for the indigenous community. In our project, the indigenous community is the the first actor or the principal actor, and we have an agreement with them. The process is that they coconize the coca leaf, and with that extract, we make our products. Our like main purpose is to have or to give a legal use of this coca leaf, this magical plant. So we are working under that coverage of legality. So we are working with the indigenous community. They make like all the process, and we, after we have the product that is decoconized, we start to export and to commercialize their products.
It's amazing. I mean, not to delve too far into the science of this, because I imagine it's firstly highly technical and secondly absolutely a trade secret of power leaves. But could you explain a little bit about this process of decoconization?
The process is like Ahmed said, it's a like unique process. We have an IP protection for their process. Our scientific people or our scientific team teach to the community all the process, and in the community are all the employees are from the indigenous community. They work from a foundation that we create, but it's a indigenous foundation, and everything is made by them. They are the people who make the cultivation, the transportation, and also the process of the cocainization, of course, with our technical support and scientific support. But everything is done in the territory, indigenous territory. We don't do anything out of the indigenous territory. So that's our coverage. And after make the process, we have the power leaves. It has another facilities out of the territory. They receive the product that is not under control. And with that product, we make our commercializations and exportation. At this moment, we are exporting to more than 5 countries, and we are planning to expand our operations in all over the world.
It's so interesting, this cultural right, because of the long history of indigenous groups having coca as a medicinal plant, as a spiritual aid in Colombia and various countries in the region. Only indigenous groups have the right to grow and work with this plant. So Nasawala, which I believe is the name of the foundation, they cultivate the plant and they decoconize the plant. And then once the plant is decoconized, because it's no longer a narcotic, it's any other substance. And there's a great freedom to work with it, to investigate its qualities, to create various products with it. And Power Leaves is obviously pioneering in that sense. I'm wondering if you knew when you started, Ahmed, how much potential there was in this plant. Which was the product that you started with, and how did it grow to these three different strands?
You know, I think right at the outset, our mind was kind of looking and thinking extract all the way. And we were, thinking about the different ways of just getting the extraction and decoconization process done as effectively and efficiently as possible. And then, of course, one of the kind of principles, the guiding principles of the company and of working with the indigenous group as well, important on both ends, is environmental awareness and environmental friendliness. So the essence product came about as a byproduct, just given, the extract is done through ethanol, water, ionic exchange extraction process, and one of the byproducts is the essence product. Mm-hmm. And then the fertilizer idea to just is the waste stream from that extraction process as well. So literally the extract is the main product, the byproduct is essence, and then the third one is the fertilizer. And it's just been incredible. And just the fact that we can use all three of those streams beneficially, it shows kind of the, again, keep using the word magic, but it shows kind of the excitement that we've had, right, of discovering the magic, at each step of the way. It's like, wow, we could use this byproduct stream for this. And wow, even the waste stream is enhancing crop cultivations and so on. So it's just been, a special thing to be a part of as we uncover all of these things along the way.
Absolutely. And obviously in this very complex regulatory environment, you have as a company seen governments come and go in Colombia. You've certainly been around longer than the most recent government of Gustavo Petro, who is much more liberal on this issue. Have things changed for the company in terms of the support that you get institutionally since you arrived in Colombia?
At the outset, I would say our project and the legal framework that she commented on earlier predates the Petro government.
Yeah, absolutely.
And overall, once the Petro government came in power last August, we've seen a different approach. And, one of there are a few key components of the national development plan presented by that government was, indigenous rights, commercialization or alternative approaches on coca and the war on drugs and hunger. And all three of those kind of objectives align with what we have been doing. So the government has been, very supportive, fascinated. The vice president visited our facilities and sites on more than one occasion. Mm. And Carolina is working very, very closely with the government. And I'll hand it over to her with that.
Yeah, so when we start, when the government was more conservative with previous government, so that's why our project is structured under the legal framework that we have we had at that moment. And now with the new government, when they start with all the policies, they want to change, or they change actually the drug policies control in Colombia, because they are not focused on eradicated the coca leaf or the plantations for coca. They want to give a legal uses of coca leaf. So that's exactly what we are doing now in our project. We presented our project last year, and since that we are having a really good relationship with the government. We present this project as a one of the solutions for Colombia. We want to be more than a company. We have like a really a social, corporate social aims in our company. We have been developing social plans in the community. We build bridges. We support them in educational plans. We have supporting them also with the health and with give them employees are, and also give them the opportunity to access to things that before our project they couldn't do that. We are working at this moment with more than 16,000 people. Every day, more and more families from the indigenous community are interested to be in this project. So they start to work with the foundation that they hire the indigenous families, and as employees they give the cultivation of the coca leaf, and they also work for the foundation. And we present all our project to the government because we want to reply this project to all over Colombia and other communities. So the idea to work with the government, close to the government, is to just be a pilot project for Colombia, and can have more benefit for different communities in Colombia. The policies of zero hunger, of change the drug policy controls for give legal uses to the coca and other drugs. Mm. And We are aligned with that. So the vice president and the president are also know our project, and we are working to see how we can just reply this project in another communities in Colombia. At this moment, we're gonna start to work with the fertilizer, because this product is aligned with the zero hunger and all the problems that we have now with to get the fertilizers, because we import the fertilizers in Colombia and it's so expensive, so the poor communities cannot access to the fertilizer that easy. So the government is trying at this moment to have plans and programs to buy fertilizers that can be provided to all the communities around Colombia.
It's so fascinating, this change in environment and change in priorities. Obviously, the new government is interested not just in food security, but in food sovereignty as a way to food security. So producing a fertilizer in country that's cheap, that is, you know, at origin a waste product of what you guys do, just fits so perfectly with those priorities. And also, you know, to some degree, the dropping certainly by higher ups, the executive officials, of this stigma, this desire to destroy fields and fields of coca rather than repurpose or dignify what coca farmers are creating and what ancestral communities have been doing with this plant. So that feels like a big obstacle has been lifted, or a big new collaborative government has come in. What other obstacles has the company faced?
Yeah, I think one of the most principal obstacles that we have is the educational part, because as soon as you talk about coca, the people thinks about cocaine. So I think this is the biggest obstacle we have. We are under all that legality. We have everything in place. When we present our project to the government entities, they say you are in good standing. You don't need a special permit or something like that, because your product is not under control. We are working with some entities and universities that certify that our product is doesn't have any agonine or alkaloid inside, so it's not under control. We have all the certifications, but the big issue that we find every day is with the people that doesn't know. Maybe when we have the transportation, even in the indigenous community, the police stop the car, and when see the coca leaf, we need to explain this, because this is more than legality. This is educational issues that the people has as a stigma that they have with this magical plant. So they think,
right, yeah.
We unfortunately we have suffered for many years a problem with the cocaine and all the narcos stuff, but the people thinks just about cocaine when it's when you talk about coca leaf. So that's the stigma is the principal issue. I don't know in my opinion.
Hmm.
I wholeheartedly agree with that as well. Absolutely, in all facets, the stigma. As soon as you mention the word coca, people, their mind immediately goes to cocaine. And after a quick education of kind of, you know, we're dealing with decoconized coca extract and the beautiful attributes of the coca plant outside of, that illicit use, people become fascinated and quickly overcome it. And, it's just a matter of education, as Carolina said. You know, after a few minutes of kind of like looking into these other elements, people usually come outside very quickly and are fascinated by it. Yeah. So it's been, you know, even from dealing with banks to any and all regulatory authorities along the way, right? Mm-hmm. It's a quick educational piece, and then alignment and buy-in into the excitement of what we're doing.
Right. I think this is an interesting time to bring in, you know, the, I don't want to say monster, let's say giant instead, in this sphere in terms of business, who are Coca-Cola. Because what you're telling me is that you guys rigorously decoconize the product in order to be allowed the freedom to work with it and to export it. From what I understand, Coca-Cola doesn't do this. Coca-Cola imports to the US coca leaf as is.
Yeah. So outside of power leaves, there's really, and to date, there's only been one legal coca supply chain globally. And, that's from Peru. And it's in Peru, there's a state company called INACO, National Coca Company. And INACO sells coca leaves to Stepan Company, and Stepan Company has a one-of-a-kind permit from the U.S. government, from the DEA, that it renews annually every March. And it's the only permit of its kind that allows the importation of coca leaves from Peru, from the Peruvian government entity. Stepan Company has a facility in Maywood, New Jersey. And that facility, they undergo, a similar extraction process. They would have two streams in that process. So one is, you know, the alkaloids are separated and removed, and then not destroyed as in our process, but and used for fertilizer, but rather they're kept and used for active pharmaceuticals, for pharmaceutical drugs. And that's sold to Mallinckrodt Pharmaceuticals. To a New York Stock Exchange listed company like Step & Co. And Mallinckrodt uses it for Novocaine and other pharmaceutical drugs. And though that would be used for like dental procedures or tear duct surgeries and similar things as kind of a numbing agent. And then the coconized coca extract that Stefan has is sold exclusively to Coca-Cola. And that is Coca-Cola's secret sauce. And that's that unique winter fresh taste that you taste in Coca-Cola that you don't taste in other colas. And, from there, Coca-Cola exports that decoconized coca extract to over 220 countries around the world. And it's their secret ingredient, and this is their loan application for it. And what's exciting about what we're doing is we're bringing this decoconized coca extract and pursuing other applications of it outside of the coca realm. And for the first time outside of that kind of supply chain and control of Coca-Cola.
Such a fascinating case of corporate exceptionalism that in the midst and for the entirety of the USA's war on drugs, they have been allowing this enormous corporation to import just tons and tons of coca leaf. It's brilliant in its way.
Yeah, it is fascinating.
It's an interesting case study in a whole bunch of things that we do not have time to go into today. But I think another really interesting mark of what you guys are doing relates to the product, I'm not sure if it's even a product, a chemical, aspartame, which has been in the news a lot over the last couple of weeks because the WHO, the World Health Organization, are announcing it as a possible carcinogen, i.e. a cancer-causing chemical. There's a lot of aspartame in Coca-Cola products. There's a lot of aspartame in all kinds of products, including gum, I found out the other day. How does this intersect with the coca market?
Have you ever thought about visiting or even moving to Colombia's lush and welcoming Coffee Axis? We at Coffee Axis Travel can provide a personalized service from before your arrival to guide you through the process of setting up a new life here in Colombia's coffee region. We will help you find a place to live, help you navigate contracts and leases, advise you on your visa application and how to open a bank account, and more. With over 10 years of experience in this region, Erin Donaldson, originally from Reno, Nevada, can provide unrivaled knowledge about an area in which she is unashamedly passionate. Check out www.coffeeaxistravel.com for further information on half-day or full-day lifestyle tours and any bespoke consulting required in setting up your new life in Colombia. That's www.coffeeaxistravel.com, where you can get in touch.
Yeah, for sure. So on the extract product, you know, we've been exploring and pursuing different wellness applications of it. And one of the key ones that we found is that it's bitterness reducing, and which is kind of, you know, the same as sweetening. And with a lot of the diet beverages that you see kind of around the world, that they do have aspartame in them. And the beauty of coca extract is if it's proving to be a sweetener that removes the necessity of adding aspartame to the beverages, then you're removing that carcinogen from the beverages going forward. So it's kind of, you know, fascinating in terms of kind of like the timing of what we were doing. And what the WHO has just announced recently.
And also in terms of Coca-Cola's own business model, because they are using both coca and aspartame in a lot of their products, which raises a lot of questions. I wanted to go back actually to something you said, because I think it's so interesting. You used the expression winter fresh in reference to the taste of coca. And that, for me, it just, in so many ways, you know, and I think this is maybe the secret of Coca-Cola, it's so difficult to describe the taste of it. I just don't have the vocabulary to describe what that taste is. And maybe that is because of the monopoly that Coca-Cola has had, right, on this taste, on the use of this product in food and drink, that we don't really have the words except Coca-Cola to describe what that taste is.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, to date, we've all just known it in that one application, right?
The taste of Coca-Cola is Coca-Cola. Flavor. What does Coke taste like? It tastes like Coke. I don't know.
Exactly. But, you know, now, and as Carolina said, we've exported to many countries. You know, we're working with many different partners around both kind of use of it as a flavor agent and use of it in wellness capacities, and you know, the feedback for anybody who's any of the potential partners who've done samplings, tastings, different formulations and different experiments, and same with the ones that we've done internally, is it's just been overwhelming in terms of like the feedback. You know, there's certainly a unique flavor and aroma that can serve as the foundation of many other products from the extract.
Yeah, and I've spoken to chefs who work with it in country at a much more artisanal level, who've told me that different strains can produce different tastes. So there are some that are sweeter and some that are more bitter. So maybe we're looking at a whole new palette of tastes rather than taste like Coca-Cola.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And you guys work with a specific strain, you were telling me when we last spoke.
Yeah. So, I mean, we have one of our three facilities. Two of them are on Indigenous territory, and one of them in Indigenous territory. We're working closely with the Nasawala Foundation and the Indigenous, just regarding kind of, you know, at the plant genetics level. And to date, obviously, just because we've been destroying the alkaloids, we've been working with, you know, the low alkaloid strains and seeking out the low alkaloid strains of the coca plant. But, you know, as you said, you know, there's a lot of different potentials for a lot of different palates and different uses. And so, you know, we expect that that one R&D facility for a lot of kind of options and potential to come out of it and the research that's being done there.
Absolutely. And just to bring in another case study that I was reading about a while back, and I think I mentioned this to you on one of our prep calls, is that Coca-Cola are proving to be somewhat litigious and have entered into a lawsuit with, I think it's called NASA Cola, which is a cola beverage made with coca by an Indigenous group in Colombia. Are you worried that by shaking or threatening this monopoly that Coca-Cola has held for so long, that you might be in danger of pissing off this monstrous company?
You know, I think at some point or another, we will be under the radar of Coca-Cola. We're not seeking to compete with Coca-Cola. We're not getting into the cola space. Again, we're mostly looking at other uses of extract and the essence and fertilizer products. So I don't think, you know, they're viewing us as a risk or a patent or copy, right? Infringer, trademark infringer of, I guess they think they own the word cola. But
yeah, which
it is
crazy in its own right. It's a lawsuit, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And suing an Indigenous group.
That's
manufacturing that product.
What?
Yes. And that other company, that you mentioned, it's a local Colombian Indigenous company. Mm. And I don't think that they actually go through the, you know, they operate more in a gray area in Colombia.
Yes. Yeah.
Without the alkaloid destruction elements that we do, to ensure like full compliance with laws and ability to kind of export it. So to go after like a local Colombian Indigenous company that's only operating in that little area is kind of,
yeah, you know. I mean, artisanal fizzy drinks are surely not lawsuit worthy. Yeah. This is why I describe them as litigious. Yeah. I think it's mental.
Yeah.
That's what I mean.
In Colombia. In Colombia, you can find, like in all the small shops, you can find coca tea, but and coca beverage and many food and beverage about coca, but coca leaf, but with agonine and all the alkaloids, so they don't make our process. Yeah. Definitely they don't make that, and they are like doing the final products. Our products are not non-final, are just intermediate product. We just have an ingredient that is flavoring and also aroma, and we expect to have clients from food and beverage sector and industry, but at this moment we don't see them as a competitors of our business, because we are focused just on the ingredient, to get the ingredient.
Right. You guys sell to ingredients houses, if I'm not wrong, which is an amazing concept that I'm only just learning about, who then sell to companies who create consumer-facing products.
Yeah, correct. We sell to ingredient houses as well as to food and beverage manufacturers directly as well.
Mm. I mean, I imagine, given that your major markets are the US and the EU, you guys really are blazing the trail on these imports.
Yes, certainly. You know, it's been interesting just looking at kind of the legal and regulatory framework in those, you know, the US, Canada, and the EU, and just about, you know, how it's, you know, I think Carolina alluded earlier to non-control. You know, it's not a controlled substance because right. there is no drugs or narcotics in it. And, you know, that goes back to the stigma and the educational element. But, you know, anytime that there's any reach out or interest from any new potential partners, customers, they're immediately kind of intrigued by the legal regulatory framework in the United States. Coca and decoconized coca is in the U.S. regulations, and it's specifically listed as a grass substance, which is generally recognized as safe for the GRAS acronym. And you know, in Canada, much the same way, we'd look at it as a food ingredient.
Right.
And same for the EU, as a food ingredient, non-controlled, non-narcotic. And then, you know, all of our partners, you know, some of the food and beverage ones are looking at it right away for, you know, taste. And that's, you know, as you alluded to earlier, because of the Coca-Cola, you know, taste as we know it would be the immediate reaction. And then the more you delve into, you know, the plant, the properties, the nutrient rich, the effects of it, and get into different formulations. Mm-hmm. You get into that other applications and other, you know, wellness attributes to explore and pursue as kind of wellness products, which is also, you know, consistent with where the world has been shifting and people's mindsets have been shifting lately as well, of course. So it's kind of all marrying up in that sense.
Certainly, there seems to be, even if slowly, a sense that the war on drugs and prohibitionist attitudes and stigma towards not just users of drugs, but also those involved in the chain of creation. In Colombia, for example, those who grow coca leaves have long, long been stigmatized, and the new government has not only been at the UN saying the war on drugs is a disgusting and genocidal failure, but we also need to vindicate the work of people as well as the necessities of people who are driven to that work. And I wonder, Ahmed, because you've worked sort of with the cannabis case study, how parallel do you see these two drugs and their journeys into mainstream uses and wellness uses? And what are the differences, if you think there are any?
You know, I think there's a lot of similarities in the sense that, you know, at the outset, there's a lot of stigma surrounding both. I mean, probably less so now in cannabis,
right.
Because it's been legalized in many places mm-hmm. over time. But even with that legalization, there's a lot more regulation mm-hmm. around cannabis.
Yeah.
It is still mind-altering or impairing. You know, you can't consume cannabis and drive legally in most countries or things like that. So it is still regulated, much the same as alcohol would be.
Right.
And where coca, it you know, it has many similar potential benefits to cannabis in terms of kind of, you know, wellness applications and medicinal applications.
Mm.
It isn't. Once the alkaloids are removed, it's non-controlled, it's non-regulated. It would be regulated the same as any other food ingredient, you know, because we are dealing with decoconized extract that doesn't have any narcotics or anything. So it's actually been, you know, once you overcome the stigma, it's actually been easier to navigate the regulatory framework and how mm-hmm. the exportation, importation, use and regulation of coca, things are on the coca side. And again, because there's no mind altering or impairing attributes of it, it will be a lot more mainstream and not, you know, you don't have to go to specialty stores to get it. You can buy it anywhere in any food and beverage, you know, without age requirements or or the like, right? Like, you know, anybody that has drank Coca-Cola has consumed coca extract.
Right, yeah.
It's much the same, right?
Absolutely.
Less regulated in that context.
Yeah, I think, and also the benefits are more developed in the case of cannabis. I came also from the cannabis industry, they are more like they have a regulation, they have a legal framework, they have more restriction. I think we need first to educate the people about coca leaf benefits, because most of the people doesn't know all the benefits that has this magical plant that are even more than cannabis. And also in the case of coca leaf, there are a special protection for the cultural uses and ancestral uses for the indigenous people. In the case of cannabis, is not the same. So it's more restricted for cannabis at this moment, and also have been given more uses for cannabis, no?
So it's clear that for this project to expand, which it already has done so much, what's needed is a cultural change in terms of education, in terms of removing those barriers. And it could also be, from what I'm understanding, a real source of jobs and infrastructure for communities like the NASA community. What are the long-term goals here?
Part of the process of kind of establishing the company the way we have, and the key relationship for us has been our work with the indigenous community there. And as Carolina mentioned earlier, you know, in the Colombian constitution, indigenous rights are protected, and they have the ability to make their own laws for indigenous territories, the same way as you would see in Canada or in the U.S. And we went through, you know, a several year collaboration process. It's called the Consulta Previa, and Carolina can give you a little more detail on it, but prior consultation process where, you know, there's a real level of community engagement with the indigenous community and seeking their input and what their goals are. And they're, you know, our foundational partner
right
on this. So, you know, aligned with their goals would be Power Leaf's goal, because that's the foundational partnership. So, you know, we're seeking improving prosperity and the lives of the indigenous community as part of what we do. We bring doctors and dentists there. We build infrastructure. We built a bridge. We hold events for the indigenous community. And, you know, if you speak with the leaders of the indigenous community or the Nathawala Foundation, they'll tell you of the population there, everybody's touched in some way. You know, whether they're part of the cultivar families or cultivator families that are often multi-generational indigenous families living in the same home that have their cultivation and sell the plants to the Nasawala Foundation for use ultimately in the extract, or directly employed in R&D, in extraction and transportation. They're touched and they're seeing prosperity and positive impact from the relationship already. And we want that to continue and to grow. And also the sense of kind of positivity that's come from it and using it for these uses as opposed to potential, you know, other illegal or illicit uses. You know, it brings a different sense of mentality and approach and positivity to the framework. So that's certainly a front of mind goal. And another key goal is bringing the magic and the beauty of the plant to the rest of the world. You know, this is the first time outside of Coca-Cola that the rest of the world can get access to it in different applications. And we're really excited to facilitate that, enable it, and also, you know, sky's the limit in terms of products and attributes that can be developed with it, you know, for wellness potential.
Coca-Cola famously is a company that has been a major driver of obesity in both adults and children that has had pretty terrible ecological effects in terms of, you know, the way they run their agriculture, their supply chain, the enormous amount of waste that their bottles, et cetera, create in places where there's often no recycling or even waste management. Power Leaves has a circular model, almost an ecological model, by which even the waste product is sellable. Is this a model that can be scaled, can be applied to other communities in Colombia or even further afield?
Absolutely. I mean, the environmental component like that, the waste reduced and highly efficient processes is definitely one component. Our facilities, our mountain facilities in Colombia are made from eco containers, recycled eco containers. And we use hydro, we use solar power. You know, we're seeking, you know, in conjunction with our indigenous partners to leave the smallest footprint possible and doing everything in the most environmentally friendly way. So that's definitely one big component, and it's very modular in terms of the way that we can expand and grow as a company by, you know, simply kind of fleshing out and growing in that same manner.
Yeah, and the idea of our project that is completely sustainable is to replicate the model in all over Colombia and other communities. That's the idea, to work very close with the government and to replicate this project to other communities, other indigenous communities in Colombia.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been so fascinating, and I really look forward to seeing what happens in the future with the company.
Yeah, thank you very much for having us. It's been great.
Thank you.
The Colombia Calling podcast is sponsored by Latin News, a leading source of political and economic analysis on Latin America and the Caribbean since 1967. Their flagship publication, the Latin American Weekly Report, provides a behind-the-scenes briefing on all the week's key developments throughout the region. Sign up for a 14-day free trial at latinnews.com. We are also sponsored by BNB Colombia Tours, which is a leading tour operator providing a wonderful range of exclusive small group shared tours for those over 50, along with customizable private tours to both popular and off-the-map destinations throughout this beautiful and diverse country. If you're interested in experiencing one of their unforgettable journeys through Colombia, be it a shared tour with like-minded travelers or creating a unique private package of your own, just complete the form on the Colombia Calling website, that's www.colombiacalling.co, or the BNB Colombia Tours website, that's www.bnbcolombia.com, and they'll be in touch within 24 hours to answer all of your questions and to start the planning of your exclusive Colombian adventure. So that's bnbcolombia.com and latinnews.com. Thank you for supporting our sponsors.
With everything you have on your plate, earning your degree online seems impossible. But at Grand Canyon University, we specialize in helping you fit a master's degree in education into your busy day. Your graduation team, led by your own GCU counselor, provides you with the personal support you need to succeed. Achieve your goals with a plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.